This is A Wild Conversation.
Hi everyone, welcome to A Wild Conversation. My name is Callum Hughes and I'm joined with Ashley Wysick. Am I saying that right?
Yes, I think. Awesome. I don't know. I'm not that picky.
Fair enough. I think I got a good way to remember it. I'm going to think Lord of the Rings. I'm going to think Ashley the Wysick. That's going to be your title from
that,
now on.
That's a creative one. I like that one.
Thank you. If you're ever late, you can just say, you know, I show up when I'm supposed to. Never late. I don't know if that's how it goes. Someone will correct me on that for sure.
Definitely. I don't know very well either. I haven't watched Lord of the Rings in a very long time.
Totally fair. I'm still trying to convince my girlfriend, but it will happen.
It will. Yeah. As long as you're determined enough, right?
Very true.
Oh, yeah.
And so today, what I'm hoping to do is to introduce us, because we're just starting this podcast here at the Greater Vancouver Zoo.
Woo!
And we're going to be talking about like what makes us passionate about wildlife and why we got into the field of conservation. So I was hoping you could start off so I could try and outdo you a bit, you know, maybe, you know, set the bar for me. That's okay.
I'm not even surprised. This is just like you. Sorry. Throw me under the bus.
Joking.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's actually funny that you say that, like how we got involved in conservation and zookeeping and all that, because I 100% got into this accidentally.
Really?
I did. I spent my entire life wanting to become a veterinarian, like a large animal veterinarian. I had no idea that zookeeping was even a thing, no interest. I was just like, I'm going to be a cow vet. I like cows. I'm going to be a vet for cows. That's my life. That's my destiny. But then I found out that with vet school, they like it if you have experience with animals. So I was like, well, then I'm going to get experience with every single kind of animal I can find. So I started volunteering here when I was 16 and it kind of spiraled out of control. And I've had a complete 180 on what I want to do with my life, because zookeeping is 100% my career path now.
Really?
Okay, now outdo that.
I can't. That's you've set the bar way too high. I grew up on a farm, fish farm.
Ooh.
Totally a legit farm, even if it's fish.
Yeah, not a fan of fish.
We will work on that. We will work on that. They are awesome. So I was always surrounded by frogs, snakes, lizards.
Those aren't fish.
You know, like they live on the fish farm, right?
No, I'm totally bugging you.
And, you know, I was always interested in catching them and learning more about them. Catch and release, of course. And then I'd always watch the documentaries, you know, Steve Irwin, Jeff Corwin, David Attenborough shows. I just complete silence watching those, you know. He's got like that voice that you just keeps you focused, but it doesn't put you to sleep, you know?
Yeah. I totally get you. And he's got a very recognizable voice. You know exactly if it's David Attenborough.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Is there anyone here in Canada who's like particularly famous for wildlife documentaries? I'm from the UK.
Oh, my God. I'm from Canada, but I'm an awful Canadian because I am not sure. Growing up, I actually didn't have a TV. So I didn't really grow up with shows. We were really, really, really poor. But my mom made the awful decision of letting me get pets, even though we were pretty critically under budget all the time. So I really grew up, I just grew up with animals. Like they were my companions. They were my best friends. They're everything I could depend on. So I always knew I wanted to do something with animals. And after the cat, we had a cat that my mom bought when she was pregnant with me. Absolutely loved that. That was my cat. We grew up together. He was my best friend. And after like he passed away, I was just like, I want to be a vet. I want to help animals. I want to protect animals. And then halfway down the road, I was like, I like cows. I don't know where the cow thing came from, actually. But yeah, so I never really watched nature documentaries and stuff like that. I didn't discover David Attenborough until I was like 15, 16, because I'm a crazy person.
Hey, I mean, at least then, you know, you have all the shows that he made up until then to
binge
watch.
That's true. You know? I do have lots of binge time, which is pretty great. So a lot of my animal obsession was started just kind of personally. Yeah, I spent a lot of time at my grandfather's hobby farm. And his next door neighbor had cows. That's where the cow obsession came from. I remember now. Ken had cows, and I loved his cows.
Did you work with cows before, or?
Yes. So I actually, I worked with Ken. So he was the neighbor of my grandfather's property. And want to get dark, but like when I was 10 years old, my grandfather died and we moved onto the property and we're living there, and I was not doing great. I was very sad. I was a 10-year-old, right? And my grandpa was my whole world, and then he was gone and I didn't really understand. And Ken kind of stepped in almost like a grandpa figure and started, he basically was like, hey, to my dad, does Ashley want to come over and help me brush horses? Does Ashley want to come over and feed the cows with me? And I was just like, yeah. Is that a question?
Right.
So, yeah, this kind of, I don't know, I had like this weird blank where I totally forgot about that.
Well, I totally get why that would, you know, strike your interest, right?
Yeah, it was pretty great. So I love cows. I knew all his cows by name.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was like, that's Robin. And that's Andrew, and that's Dakota. They all had like people names. It was great.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Did you name all your fish?
I'd run out of names. You would have Daisy 0.5672A-/ SIN number.
SIN number.
Oh, whew. But we don't farm fish for eating. These are all carp. So not particularly good eating fish. Some people do eat them, but they're very bony, taste a bit like mud. So we pretty much farmed them to supply fisheries so people can catch them and release them, sometimes in like fishing competitions and stuff.
Oh, just that's kind of cool.
Catch and release. So yeah, not for the food industry. I mean, we didn't live in an area where you could have like a trout farm, for example. The water's not cold enough and no fast flowing streams, pretty flat.
Going to be completely honest with you, man. So when I was going through this obsession of I wanted to work with every single taxonomic group because I'm crazy, I worked at a fish farm for a little while.
Oh, yeah?
Going to university. Yeah, I did a co-op program and they were breeding rainbow trout.
Okay.
And Arctic char? ? Yeah, I'm not a fan. The fish didn't like me, and I really liked to interact with animals, and every time I entered the building, they'd all be like, oh my god, and swim away from me, and I felt rejected and sad. I took it very personally, basically.
I mean, you know, that's Arctic char and rainbow trout, so I don't think that's
I've never worked with carp. Maybe they're more friendly. Maybe they're like the Labradors of fish. I don't know.
No. There's no affection there, but I mean, you know, like the catfish, you know, scuba divers that recognize... could scuba dive, of course, so I'm not talking about fish on the farm, but you know, you get those moray eels that come up to greet divers that they know and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
There are some pretty good fish, but I will say they're not the most affectionate taxonomic group.
I definitely think I need to work with some different fish then, because I've only done the fish farm and I was like, this was very sad. They don't like me.
You gotta go scuba diving, snorkeling.
I definitely do. Yes, I have not done either of those things.
Really?
I haven't done very many things, man.
Oh man, that's, you know,
I like the fact that I work here is by convenience, because my grandfather's farm is literally like right across the street down that way. Yeah, I grew up in this area. I'm very, 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 like, you're from the UK and I'm just like, wow, I'm from like 500 meters that way.
Yeah, but like, how did you go from cow veterinarian to zookeeper?
Well, when I was going
to... Wait, what route do you work with the carnivores, right?
Yeah, I do. I work with the lions and the tigers, which is a little different than cows.
That's a few levels up from a cow.
Levels up from a cow. Yeah. Well, what happened was when I was going to university, I did my co-op program with the fish farm, and I was volunteering here at the time, just getting in my volunteer hours at a... animal place. And then they dropped me they were going to do 2 terms of a co-op with me, and then they dropped me like 2 weeks before or like the next term was going to start, and I hadn't signed up for any classes, and I was basically screwed.
Wait, this is the fish farm that dropped
you? The fish farm, yeah, they dropped me.
It's because you weren't being nice to the fish.
Because the fish were scared of me, and the fish filed an HR complaint. No, so then I contacted the head of who was running the volunteer program at that time. And I was like, hi, do you by chance do co-op programs? And I'd known her for quite a few. I think I had been volunteering for like almost 3 years at that point. I was like the honorary chinchilla keeper, because I used to come in and just help our vivarium keeper with his chinchillas every Sunday. Yeah. And she was like, I mean, technically, because they needed help that summer. So I actually went through my university and got them approved for the co-op program. And I started here, co-op in education, and I started driving the trains. So, huh. And then I got to know the zookeepers, and a couple times they needed my help with something, or like they needed an extra hand. So I would go help out in the hippo barn, or I would go help out at the, at some one of the other barns. And then education started doing the talks. So I did the lion and tiger talk a couple times with, and I was just like, this is really cool. I really like this. Mm-hmm. And so then I was thinking, oh, you know, I didn't really want to go to the Saskatchewan vet school. I wanted to go to the one in Alberta because Alberta's got cows. They got cows for days. I was still a little obsessed with that. So I was like, oh, well, I'm going to have to get my residency to get into Alberta. I was like, oh, Alberta has a zoo. I could work at the Alberta Zoo. And I was like, I want to work at the Calgary Zoo. Sorry, Alberta Zoo. There's multiple. Ignore that.
Fair enough.
I wanted to work at the Calgary Zoo, and I was like, okay, well, why don't I get experience as a zookeeper, and then I can go over there and do animal stuff there because it's animal related. And then I was like, yeah, I'll spend like a year being a zookeeper at the Great Vancouver Zoo, and then I'll go to Alberta. It's been 3 years. I've been a zookeeper here for 3 years. I just started here, and I was like, this is awesome. I love this. I'm near all my family. This is kind of like what I want to do. I don't even want to go to vet school now.
Okay.
So what's the point in leaving?
Totally get that. You know? Yeah. If you found what you want to do, like, it's crazy.
I started here in the, when did you get here? You've been here how long?
Just over a year now. I came here in September.
Oh, damn.
I was in Ontario at the time, and, I was just sending out applications, hoping, you know, to get a response. I didn't think I'd get a reply. I got an interview, and then I got accepted for it. And I was like,
wow. And you're like in Ontario?
It's yeah.
Like,
so we were lucky, too.
It's a bit of a commute.
We got right there because this was 2020. We got the break in, 2020. And we got the break when the numbers from the pandemic went down and it was okay to travel again.
Oh, there you
go. And we just drove for 5 days straight to get over here.
Oh my gosh, you drove?
We drove because, you know, didn't want to take an airplane during that time. Oh, we didn't want to stay in a hotel, so we camped out, you know, made sure that we took every precaution, came here, isolated for 2 weeks, and then bang, started my first day. And yeah, super happy about that because, you know, my whole life I've wanted to work with animals. I've had the joy of volunteering in a bunch of projects. And I got my education in wildlife conservation.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm super excited to be working with wild animals in here, and super happy to be a part of the team here at Greater Vancouver Zoo.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun here.
Definitely.
Because of me.
I mean, sorry. Yes, definitely agree with you.
Totally, 100%. Oh, that wasn't egotistical at all.
What, me or you?
No, me. 100% me. Well, I was because of what... Yeah, so it's been like a year and a bit. Do you remember our reptile house?
When I came here, it was already closed.
Yeah.
And I think there were...
All the reptiles moved to other zoos throughout Canada. I just couldn't remember. That's where I started 3 years ago. Was in a... Fantastic, by the way. Because in the wintertime... You're in a completely heated building. You come into the staff room at lunchtime and you're like, oh, why are you guys all wearing pants? And you're like wearing shorts and t-shirt. And everyone's like, oh, dang reptile keeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They definitely have it good. Definitely.
So Cal, you said that you're from the UK, but right before you came here, you were in Ontario. What were you doing in Ontario?
So a bit of a long story, but before Ontario, I was in Thailand and I was teaching English.
That's cool.
I met my girlfriend there who was Canadian. Huh. And after dating for a year, we kind of talked and decided I was going to come back to Canada. So she kind of kidnapped me. I came to Canada and I with a visa and I got a job in as... kind of as a wildlife technician.
Oh.
So it was dealing with raccoons, squirrels, skunks, opossums sometimes, breaking into people's homes and putting in one-way doors. And it was more of a contractor job, really.
Okay.
So it was kind of, you know, prevention, making sure they couldn't get back in, because if you get a raccoon out, it will rip through the shingles to get back in.
Oh, gosh.
Especially if there's a weakness. And of course, sometimes during the baby season, you have to go into the house, get the babies out, put them in a special incubator, put the incubator right next to where the mom has been going in and out. So then when you put the one-way door in and she comes out, she can get her babies and move to another den.
Okay.
So that was, yeah, it was pretty good work. Yeah, pretty intense in some of those cold winter days with all the ice on the roofs, but good fun.
Winters in general are just so intense.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it.
I can only imagine, too, because I've never actually experienced an Eastern Canadian winter. I'm a baby and I've only ever had the BC winters, which are mostly just slush.
Yeah, I thought Ontario was bad, but Quebec, way worse. I went for winter carnival. Oh my God. They had like a meter of snow on their roofs.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine that.
Have you done any volunteering before with any wildlife groups apart from the farming that we've discussed?
Yeah, well, I volunteered here, and I also volunteered at the Northern Spotted Owl Breeding Center, which is right in Fort Langley, because everything I do is local, because I'm lame, and...
Hey, nothing lame, don't put yourself down. You've gone all over the place. Like, you might have done a smaller area, but you have done, like, lot of the stuff there.
That's I found really everything cool. Really close.
Yeah.
But they were really cool. It's one of the only places, I think... I know it's the only place in Canada. I can't remember if it's the only place in the world that's actually breeding northern spotted owls, which are critically endangered and native to BC here. And they actually breed them and then re-release them back into the wild. And really? It was really cool. Yeah. I mean, I didn't do a lot of the cool stuff. Most of the stuff I did was like cleaning. I helped do some maintenance work and like fix things. And they had a couple barred owls, which are, they're also native, but they're a bit more invasive to the northern spot owl habitat. And they had one that was a rescue that they would actually take with them places to kind of introduce people to owls and foster love and adoration. And I got to take him on a walk once. That was really cool. And then when I put him back on his perch, he flew as far away from me as he could get. Well, he couldn't really fully fly. He like... ran away from me as fast as he could get. So apparently I was not good company. But it was a very cool experience. I can't remember what else I did now. I'm sure there's something else I'm forgetting. What did you do for volunteer-wise?
So when I was at university, a couple things I've done is during the summers, I volunteered with Mission Wolf, which is a wolf and wolf dog sanctuary in Colorado. Great fun, great people to work with, and amazing animals. They take them around the country in this big bus, take them to schools and educate people about why wolves make terrible pets and why a wolf dog is not going to give you a friendly dog that looks like a wolf. Whatever you think, never will. Even if you raise it up from a puppy, it will still have its wolf instincts.
Oh, gosh.
I've done work with sea turtles in Costa Rica, where you try and reduce their the number of eggs being poached by moving them to special hatcheries. You increase their survival rate, release them in different parts of the beach. And that was amazing. You know, the biodiversity in Costa Rica was exponential.
So cool.
Such cool animals. And just, it wasn't even just the sea turtles. You know, there were caiman, green iguanas, tarantulas, and howler monkeys, cool. And dart frogs. So just outstanding. Another thing that I did here in Canada was a volunteering experience with grizzly bears in Alberta, actually.
Oh, really?
Might have been close to your vet school. Hopefully not. You might have had to deal with bear scratches on some of the cows.
Oh, my gosh. I hope not.
But we were checking what the grizzly bears were doing on human use trails. So whether they avoided trails based on certain human activities like quad bikes, horseback riding, the amount of dog walkers, or if they were attracted or using them more frequently. Because we know that grizzly bears avoid busy highways. Like, I think only males will cross them, females won't, which can be a serious impact on their genetic diversity.
Like, yeah, how they can't move and find new areas because of all the highways cutting apart, nature. Oh my gosh, my words are failing me now.
No, I get what you're saying. You got it. And it was interesting because, you know, you'd set these cameras up and you'd walk away, and sometimes like 14 minutes later or an hour later, a bear would show up that you didn't know was in the area.
That's terrifying.
And, I mean, like, they can smell you. Like, I think a lot of people think that their hearing is so good. I know you wear bear bells and stuff, but they actually, their best smell is, their sense is smell. And I was there for like 5 to 6 months, hiking the trails all over the place, deliberately putting cameras where bears might be on these trails. And we only came across 2 grizzlies.
Oh.
That's it. And those were special cases where it was like, you know, it was pouring with rain, so their smell wasn't so good. And the vegetation on either side of the path was really dense. So the bears were using the trails as the same as us. And of course, the second they saw us, they turned tail and ran for it, which I'm very thankful for.
Yeah, no kidding.
But so many other cool animals there, you know, tons of lynx, coyote, wolves, mountain lions, elk, bighorn sheep. It was just, you know, that's amazing. So cool.
And it's nuts because, like, oftentimes when you go on a hike, it's like, I see some birds, but it almost feels like there isn't any wildlife around. And then you realize, no, you're actually surrounded by wildlife. You just can't see the signs all the time, you know?
Well, they hear you coming and they know how to avoid you.
Oh, yeah. People can be very loud, especially me.
Totally fair. But like I said, smell, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe
that's
you just
stink. I believe that. I work with the grizzly bears we have here. And oh my gosh, sometimes they smell something in the ground and they'll be digging forever. I don't know if it's worms or some kind of bug, but when they get an idea into their head, yeah, they're so funny. One of the most successful enrichments I've ever done for them is like weird cologne. Like, we get all this donated old perfume and colognes here, and I've sprayed it on the tree. You know that scene from The Jungle Book?
Which one?
Where Baloo is, like, scratching himself on the tree.
Yes.
Like, I got one of my grizzly bears to do that. I sprayed a bunch of cologne on one of the trees, and he was actually on his back legs, rubbing his back into it. I fell over. I was laughing so hard because he was having the time of his life. It was so good. Oh, yeah.
That's the beauty of being a zookeeper is you get to, like, when you're working with wild animals, you want to be as detached as possible. You want their natural behaviors. But when you work as a zookeeper, of course, you respect their natural behaviors, but you're also allowed to give them the enrichment and stuff and get to know their personalities.
It's very true. Really, you definitely get to know all the animals very, very well. And you get to know, like, what their favorite foods are or what they don't really like or what their favorite toys are. All sorts of things. It's pretty funny. I don't know if you have the same experience. I know you work on a hoof stock, right?
Yes. I work on the hoof stock group, or Asian route, sometimes called, because I have the red pandas on my route, so no hooves, I hope. they're cool animals. They do interact with certain enrichment, not the same as the carnivores.
That's true. I have very interactive animals.
Yeah, you have the stars of enrichment. In fact, didn't you put up a load of enrichment yesterday?
Yes, for a birthday, one of our animals was celebrating their birthday. And whenever we do birthdays, I do like huge, big toys and I'll paint on them. So I wrote happy 6th birthday across this, like, there's 2 giant red Jolly Balls and a big purple tube. And it was for our lions, Castle Prim and Tess. And they got blue paint all over themselves. No, don't worry. It was all safe. It was like the tempura stuff that you give to, like, preschoolers because you're worried about them eating the paint. But they were just, like, blue. Because they rubbed themselves on it and they were like spatting them around and nosing them. Tess had like a perfect little blue nose. It was so funny.
You should have saved that for Burns Night, you know. Then it would have been like, you know, real. What's that movie called? I can't believe I've gotten it. Braveheart. Braveheart? No, that's the dragon one. I've forgotten. Am I right? Braveheart, yes. Yes. Scottish independence movie.
I know which one you're talking about too, with the dragon. I loved that movie. I had that one on VHS when I was little. I loved that one. I had like that movie on VHS, and I had like the first Pokemon movie. And those were like my movies.
Fair enough. Them.
My grandmother also, so I've already told you that we were very poor when I was little, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm where I am now. But we had a VHS player and this old crappy TV, and my grandmother would record TV shows for us, like little kid TV shows for us. And I guess she never actually watched the show herself to know when to pause or end it. So I'd be watching SpongeBob, and then like somewhere randomly in the middle of the episode, it would just like cut. And it's like this weird soap opera that I was like six. I was like, what the heck is this? What's going to happen to SpongeBob?
Well, clearly he's going to have to marry the Duchess.
Oh my gosh. It was a good time.
Good. You know, it's funny that you brought up SpongeBob, because I think like when I was a kid, I always knew I wanted to work with wild animals. And a lot of it was also the cartoons you'd watch, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants or Captain Planet. I don't know if anyone would recognize these cartoons now. I really feel old. The Wild Thornberries, you know, I'm sure you can see them online. Definitely worth a watch.
Oh, yeah.
But even then, you know, you would be inspired to go out in the world and see these animals and the beautiful environments that they live in and try to work in something that's protecting them or restoring them.
Oh, I 100% agree. Yeah, definitely. I loved watching cartoons and stuff like that. I just didn't have a lot of cartoons until I was older. But, you know, you just get mesmerized by anything to do with animals. Mm. Like cartoons or video games or even books. If there's an animal on the cover, I want to read it. Like, that was the kind of kid I was.
That's where math books catch you out. You know, when they've got those covers.
They do.
Yeah.
I'd get so excited. And then I'd open it and be like, the heck is this? This is not what I signed up for.
What does this lion have to do with geometry and algebra?
100%. Like, I've been lied to.
But I'm super excited to be a part here of the Greater Vancouver team and working in the Hoofstock and working alongside you in Carnival.
Woo!
And I'm looking forward to continuing this podcast and sharing more details about what we're doing.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun, and I'm enjoying just talking about stuff, you know? This is nice.
Definitely.
You know, this is doing the best kind of work right now.
So to our viewers, thank you very much for listening. This has been a wild conversation. If you're interested in emailing us any questions, you can do so at podcast.gvzoo.com. And this is a wild conversation.